Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
Welcome to Needle Exchange, conversations on the art of thread. I'm Jamie Chalmers, aka Mr. X-Stitch, and today I am interviewing Severina Seidel. Severina is a German embroidery artist who is on the cusp of greatness, having recently graduated from the Royal School of Needlework and having won first place in the mixed media category of the Mr. X-Stitch Contemporary Needlework Prize. How good is that? In this episode, we hear about Severina's leap from fashion design in Germany to experimental hand embroidery in London. She opens up about imposter syndrome, artistic transformation, and how painting and materials like latex found their way into her stitching. Another terrific artist with Royal School of Needlework backing is Chrissy Juno Mann, and I interviewed her, and it was a brilliant chat, all the way back in Needle Exchanges 17 and 18, so go hunting for those. If this episode inspires you, please share it with a creative friend, and I will be back next week with the second half of our conversation. So until then, enjoy the show.
Sorry about. I thought one thing that I noted. I saw a post that the Royal School of Needlework did the other day where they were introducing their new first-year students, and they'd all kind of done embroidery on their hats, and there were all these young people who've come to do the degree for the first time. And it made me wonder, like, whether you're able to reflect on what it was like at the start of that journey, because it's quite something to decide that you're going to go and do a degree with the RSN. And I wonder now, as you look back at it from this distance, like, can you remember what it was like being a first year? Can you remember all of that stuff?
It was crazy, because like I had to prepare so much, because I'm from Germany, so I had to do like the English tests, I had to do like the visa application, everything. And I was working at the time at the same, and then we had the, like, it was our first embroidery to do this baseball cap. And I studied fashion design before, but I've never done any embroidery or something. So I just, before I did this, I just did maybe two or three embroideries. And then it was like this big job of embroidering a cap. And basically all the stitches I knew was like French knot. So the majority of the baseball cap was like French knots, and we had to do like an embroidery of our town. And I'm from the countryside, so there's like nothing going on. So I had to find like motifs that represent like where I live. So I went to my mom's garden, and then I took like pictures of our house. And then I just tried to make an embroidery. So it was very, nerve-wracking, very exciting at the same time. I was really nervous about speaking English as well, because it's been 4 or 5 years since I spoke like English, so since school. So I was really nervous, but it was fine. We had a lot of we had a student from Brazil and from Norway and from Lithuania, so they all had an accent, so it was like fine, because I have a pet peeve about German people. People speaking English, I can always hear.
Go on then, what's that?
yeah. So I was really nervous about that, sounding too German, but it was fine. Yeah, it was really exciting. And I was really scared, because I didn't do any embroidery. And I thought all of them did so much embroidery before, but it was fine.
So what course had you done prior to that then? Did you say fashion?
Yeah, I studied fashion design in Germany.
So what made you decide to do a degree in hand embroidery if you didn't have much hand embroidery experience?
I always loved watching like haute couture videos where they do the embroidery. I always loved that. That's why I studied fashion design before. And I feel like in Germany, it's very technical, or at least the school I went to was very technical. We did a lot of drawing, and we did a lot of like more industrial level sewing. So it wasn't really that creative and with your hands. It was more like just on paper. Yeah, and then at the end, I was like, I really want to work in more like haute couture and the art field. And I knew with this degree, I could not really do that because I had like no experience with embroidery or embellishment. So I was just like looking at different opportunities I could learn that. And I was watching videos and then I found like a book from the RSN and then I saw they had a degree. I was like, okay, let me just apply. And it was like 1 week before deadline. Like, oh my God.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. But I made it. So that was a really interesting journey.
Yeah. It's a really remarkable degree course. Like I've been, I've been with the RSN off and on. I got described once on the telly as a visiting lecturer at the RSN because I've done a couple of talks and I was like, I'm putting that on my CV because that sounds amazing. And it's such like an unusual degree on so many levels. You know, it's in a palace. It's just one of those fundamental levels where it's just a weird place to do it. But, and so it's interesting. Yeah, I'm always curious as how people get there because over here, I don't think needlework and textiles gets a lot of representation in art and in education, certainly not like it used to do.
Hmm.
And from what you said about Germany then, it was more, was it more sort of dressmaking, that kind of stuff, if you were going into, like, what did you learn when you were
learning? It was a lot of, like, pattern making.
Right.
We did a lot of that. And I think it's good for the basic, but it's nothing avant-garde.
So it's just kind of like career driven, making sure that you might get a job out of this rather than become a whimsical artist. Sort of.
Yeah. And then you would like the brands, for example, would be like Hugo Boss. It's very like mid price and very standard. You don't do like crazy stuff. You do more like prints or something.
So then, and had you thought about going and studying in other countries at all?
I wanted to study in Italy, but I can't speak Italian.
So okay, right.
That was a bummer, and yeah, so that's why I came to the UK. But it was really lovely; like all the people were really nice. The tutors were just amazing. We got so much support, like in comparison to other universities as well. Like if you hear about them, they were just left alone, and we got like so much help with everything. We can still come to them and they will still help us. So it was really amazing.
Yeah, it is a very nurturing environment. I think everybody who's involved in it understands what a special thing that they're involved with.
Yeah, aren't they? Yeah.
And even like the alumni, the people who've graduated still look back with fondness, have a willing to support other people and stuff.
Yeah.
And then, like you say, it's quite international as well. So you were just basically terrified on several different levels as you started.
Yeah. I'm a huge overthinker, so there's a lot of different aspects you can worry about. But yeah, once you're in the field and once you, like it's right from the start, you do a lot of different things. And you're just busy all the time. You can't overthink it anymore. Mm. You're just like, oh, I need to do this. And then another thing comes to your list of things to do. So it just comes natural. You just ease into it. And then you have all the students with you that have to go through the same issues with the visa and stuff. So you just have a lot of support as well.
Yeah. And then you start off, don't you? And you just learn the basics first year, don't you? You end up with your embroidery frame with all your samples on it. Even then, like, because you've got pictures of your samples on your website, haven't you? And even then, it's interesting, like, because I guess I'm looking back at it from a perspective of, you know, you just won Mr. X Stitch Contemporary Embroidery Prize, congratulations, and all that sort of thing. So I'm looking back and trying to understand how the journey you've ended up at this point. But I want to take our time going on that journey. So it's interesting then that, yeah, year one, you learn these skills. Were you aware, as the skills progressed, that certain types of embroidery were resonating more with them? I guess with the haute couture and the fashion embroidery, there's always that lean into beading and gold work and all that sort of stuff. Was that what really tickled your fancy?
I don't know. It's really hard to like go back because I think for me, I started to like paint and draw when I was like in grade 7 or something. So I was really like more comfortable doing that instead of textiles. And then I was in fashion school and we did more drawing. So it was very much about that. So I think pretty much from the start, when we did our own project, it was a lot of me painting with not just threads, but with actual paint and stuff.
Right.
And then it was in the beginning of third year, our like tutor, Angie Weinman, she said to me actually that I always do this. And then I noticed like actually like looking back at the other 2 years, I always did like different materials like resin or paint. And then in third year, I just got crazy about that and did more and more. And then, yeah, I think it's just about a lot about experimentation and just really allowing yourself to experiment.
That yeah.
gives you like then the freedom to really develop your own language.
Yeah, I've spoken to so many people, whether they're students or even teachers, and I think a lot of the time that's that thing. It's you allowing yourself, like you said before about overthinking, it's you allowing yourself to kind of get out of your way and just go with the feels, because that's your artistic expression.
Yeah.
But it sounds like you were laying the groundwork for that a long time ago. Like you were doing that even before you entered the world of embroidery then. This kind of thing.
I mean, not with textiles necessarily. Just thinking about it, like, in first year, we did a headpiece, and it's just about the struggle of like translating my drawings into embroidery. So it's always about like finding solutions for a certain problem. And then you just look. And for me, I always look for like different artists who work with like different materials with resin. And then I'm like, oh, I need to try this. And yeah, this is how I incorporated like this stuff as well. I saw like people working with the resin, and then I was just like, let's try it on this headpiece, because I had to admit it, but it's as well about time. It's much faster than embroidery. So if I do like with paint, or if I don't like something, for me the solution is always I paint over it, it will be fine. So yeah, it's really, I don't know how to say it. It's just a comfort for me, like the painting.
Mm-hmm.
So I do it a lot.
Like a sort of security, you know it's not going to take too long. You've got an understanding of what the alchemy is. There's not a lot of, because for some people, they thrive on like the alchemy, you know, they're going to do a thing and nobody knows how it's going to turn out. I remember,
yeah,
there's been several artists who like, you know, they'll stitch a thing and then they'll pour ink all over it and you'll just be like, oh my God, you know, I'm not sure yeah. what's going to happen. Okay. Were there any, like, can you remember any experiments that you tried that failed, like, really badly and you were just like, oh, I'm not going to do that again? Did you ever do any of that?
It's usually, yeah, like, if you do a project, there's always this certain point where, like, oh, this is, everything's ugly. I can't. So, I recently did a project where it's a lot about different layers, and I don't know, I didn't really have a plan going into the project. So it was really hard to work towards a goal because I had no visual reference basically. So it was a lot about like different layers. And then I did a lot of silicone. And then I was like, oh my God, this looks so messy right now. But for me, then I just start to add more stuff over, so it always turns out fine. So I don't really have like a failure where I just couldn't work with it anymore. I always then do something over to hide like the mistakes and or paint over or, I don't know, stitch over.
But that's that thing, isn't it? They say necessity is the mother of invention. And it's that thing, isn't it? You've made a big mess. You've got to recover this mess somehow or other. So you just keep on trucking.
Yeah, I'm not really a person to throw things away. I always, I think I always manage to do something with it, even though at the moment I think it's really bad.
Mm-hmm. So let's talk about, I'm going to get it wrong again, Maleficium, your prize-winning piece. Two pieces, right? Can you talk me through? Imagine this is an audio podcast and people haven't yet gone to your Instagram to have a look, but make sure you do, people. Tell me about the story.
It's based on a German book. It's called Krabat, and it's by Ottfried Preußler. And I read it when I was really young, and it's about like black magic. That's why it's called Maleficium, and a sorcerer. So it's really dark. And I basically tried to tell the story with my art piece. It's a very abstract interpretation. So you just see like what I felt or saw in the story. So I read the book and then I took out like different aspects I really liked, like different symbols. So for example, ravens or the butterflies. And then I tried to like make a piece that has like a story in itself. So at first, the first piece like is more abstract piece. It's like an aerial view of a marsh. That's where the book was based. It has a lot of different layers as well. I started with, I cut out lace flowers and then I layered them on top of organza and then I painted with silicone. Then I did the beading and then I did a lot of gold work materials. Like I unraveled wires. And then this moves into the piece with the ravens. It's like raven silhouettes flying in the sky. And I embroidered the negative space. I used a lot of different stitches, like fly stitch, chain stitch in different sizes and scales. And I used different silk and rayon threads and strand of cotton. And then I hand dyed them with silk paint later, because I wanted to first match the colors to the first piece. And it was just much easier to get a nice gradient with painting after instead of like using already dyed threads. And then the second part is more about the ending of the story. It's more hopeful. So I did the butterflies. The first one is like more dark. I did the black butterflies to like go back to the first part, like the more darker part. And then I did the introduce like the gold with the lighter butterflies to like really showcase like the positive ending of the story. And then they just fly off to see, like, because the book, there's this orphan and he's trapped into a mill and they practice black magic there. And he gets freed basically by love. So I wanted to showcase that. It's a really nice story.
Yeah. And they're really lovely pieces, aren't they? They're quite powerful. It's one of those, there's a lot of storytelling in there, but actually if you get the opportunity, and I guess, because that will have been on display at the Knitting and Stitching Show, won't it? So people will be able to...
It's at the Hennelock. Because it's a bit of a hassle for me to put it up myself. So I made other pieces for the Knit and Stitch Show.
Okay. Oh, cool. Right. So you've entered the prize, the Hand and Knot prize.
Yeah.
Which I am a judge. But they don't put the names of the things on there. And also there were so many of them. And I've got, yeah. Okay. The detail in the piece, I think, is the thing. And that's what's striking about it, I think, is like there's all these like little intricate moments that you've built in there, and using the techniques that you've got. It's quite, I mean, like when you're making it, do you have like this big vision of what the outcome is, or are you doing it by pieces? And then when you dive into these details, how much of that is deliberately planned, or do you just sort of feel certain aspects of it out within like the larger context you're trying to create?
So I obviously had like from my sketchbook, I created like my initial idea. And then, I just started working. I did the first piece first and this took me over 300 hours. So I knew I had to be faster for the others. Yeah, obviously a limit. Yeah. So, I obviously did like sampling before, so I already had like a baseline of things I could go back to and refer in my like later pieces. And with the idea, like with the design, I had like a rough idea how it wanted to look like at the end, what like the elements, like with the dark butterflies and the light butterflies and the ravens, I already had that. But I didn't have really an idea of the materials for like the ravens and the butterflies. So it was just more on the go. It was just like testing different materials I could use, different techniques, and then just start deciding on the spot, okay, I'm doing this. There's no going back there. We don't have time to overthink this. But yeah, I just wanted to say, like, from the design, it was quite different. I had like two at the top and two at the bottom. And then I think I had two or three done. And then I realized I didn't like the layouts, because with the design, it was like similar colors. It worked quite well. But then when I made it, it was like completely different and I hated it. So I had to change that. And then I made it like the linear layout I had later. And I had to insert like the transition panels because I felt like it made it more cohesive as well. But yeah, I made myself more work with that.
Yeah, because that's the other thing, isn't it? You've got, there are these panels, there are these lines that kind of intersect. It reminds me a bit of like comic books, I guess. It's not like your work doesn't remind me of comics.
Yeah.
It's the same thing of framing between panels and the gaps that you put in there to give people a bit of what, imagination space almost. A bit of
That's
make their
true.
Own stories.
Yeah.
Yeah. There was a good phrase I remember from a comic book. It was called Understanding Comics. It's by a guy called Scott McCloud. And he says that if you kill a person between two comic book panels, between them, they can die 1,000 deaths.
Yep.
Because you're allowing the person reading to like fill in those gaps. And I suppose, yeah, you've given that kind of permission. I like a good panel interrupt as well. I think sometimes like if something's a bit too big and overwhelming, yeah, you need those little pauses, don't you? To allow people to understand that they can look at these pieces independently, that kind of thing.
Yeah, and because I use like quite different techniques, like all the panels are so different, I feel like I need something to make it seem like it's one piece that goes together and not just like four different, completely different things just floating around on the wall.
So was that piece done for the degree? Right, that was like your end of year. I mean, because it's quite a thing to go, I'm studying fashion, I've learned a few bits of embroidery, and then to produce this thing, like this is some serious drama that you're unfolding there. Can you, how did that come to pass? Was it somewhere in the second year where you were just like, oh, this stuff's getting darker and more unusual, or, you know, you where you feel that creative pull taking you? Can you reflect on that?
Yeah, I think it was in second year. We had a project with the embroidery team from Alexander McQueen. They came to the RSN, they gave us like feedback to a project we did. And like my drawings are very about like contrast, and like dark and light. And like they told me I could, like I needed to work on that basically. Like my embroidery didn't feel as dramatic as my drawings. So basically that was my goal, to like reach the same level as my drawings.
Mm-hmm.
So basically I was, from then on, I was just like trying to find like materials I can do that with. I think that was like the last thing I needed, them telling me that I need to focus, like to try to match like the drawing with my embroidery to really get the same feeling. Because before, I was really struggling with that. I said to our tutor in the beginning of second year, I was like, I don't really feel confident with my embroidery. I feel like confident in my designs and my drawings, but not really with my embroidery. I didn't really have like anything that felt like special to me or anything. So yeah, that was a really good push to start.
I've heard other students, I think, because I think Alexander McQueen, that kind of input happens pretty much every year, or like throughout each degree course you get that, isn't it? And that's quite a refreshing, there's a real avant-garde thing, isn't it? They're really going to stretch you in those kind of directions. I always think that's...
Yeah, and it's someone from the outside. So they not necessarily harsher, but they obviously have a fresh eye. They can like direct you in a new way instead of just a tutor. They follow you all through the years. And yeah, I think it was really good that they did this.
Yeah, because I'm eternally fascinated by the fact that you can have, you all come in the first year and you all end up with your slates, with your stitch samples and all those sorts of things. And then some people will do beautiful floral embroidered wall hangings by the end of it. And other people, I remember one girl, you know, did stuff to do with acrylic that was like three-dimensional see-through sculpture or whatever. And, you know, the way the creative paths go, it always fascinates me. And I mean, I was doing the Stitch Festival in March and I had some Royal School of Needlework students helping me just teaching cross-stitch to people nice and easy. But I always encouraged them. There was this fascinating point, right, where we had some first years. So this was in March. So they were getting towards the end of their first year. And then I had some second years. And we were just talking about those end of year pieces where the first years are slightly daunted by the quality of the work that has to be produced. And they see these ones that the second years have done. And then the second years are looking back at them being like, oh my God, they're so rubbish. You know, and just this gulf and just how your skills improve like so dramatically.
Yeah.
Like it's quite an incredible thing. You must be so amazed. Well, I mean, maybe you're not, but I mean, you must be so proud of the skills that you've now achieved.
It's true. Like I 3 years, like I wouldn't thought that I would do something like this. It's just, you can do so much in 3 years. And especially if you're getting pushed by the tutors and everything to do like really experimental stuff. Yeah, it's crazy how much you can improve just with the encouragement of like trying different things, and that embroidery is not just about like stitching with thread. You can do so much with it.
And what do your peers think? Like, presumably, are you back at home now? Like,
yeah.
And presumably, you still see people that you might have gone to school with and gone to college with and that sort of thing. Like, what do they make of it all? Is it bewildering? Because I feel like you could go and do a graphic design course, you'd be all right. But, like, the stuff you're doing is so unorthodox. Like, it must...
Yeah.
I'm interested to know what they make of it all.
I mean, I'm not really in contact with most because, I don't know, where I live, I always lived further apart from all the others. So I always had to travel quite far. And I studied in a different town as well. But most of them, they don't really know you can do this with textiles. It's quite fascinating. I think most have the, you know, in mind, like the little lady sitting at her desk and just stitching. It's very traditional, but yeah.
There's you creating these crazy little arcane stories and those kind of things. You said that you've been inspired by Rachel Roisch and Clementine Brandibas. I think that's the right way of doing it. And Huimin Zhang. And I was looking over those because I was interested to see where you'd taken those from. And the phrase that kept sticking in my head, which I don't even know if it's a phrase, but it's like unbeauty. Like beauty that isn't beautiful or something like that. And I wondered if that was something that would resonate with you. Like, I'm interested in what it is about that kind of work that you find interesting.
I think like one of the first designers I liked was Alexander McQueen, and all his stuff are very raw and but still so beautiful. So it was always finding like the same balance and not just doing like pretty things with embroidery. Because usually, like, in fashion, it's all very, which I like, nothing against it, but it's very pretty and...
Nothing against flowers.
Yeah. And, yeah, I wanted to do something similar. It just fascinates me, this balance between this raw emotion and still creating something so beautiful in a not very conventional sense. Yeah.
Yeah, because I think about, like, Clementine's work. Like, abstract work's really hard one to kind of pull off because it's quite easy when you show somebody something that's literal, it's quite easy for them to understand it. Whereas actually, the more abstract the work becomes, the more it's about the feeling of it all.
Mm.
And I guess then you're just evoking feelings. Is that the intention?
Yeah. I really like that, when you just look at a piece and people can have different interpretations of it. Just not just your own feelings when you do it, but when other people have like different things they see in the piece. Yeah, for example, like Maleficium, some people I thought it was quite like scary and dark, and I never felt like it. For me, it was like not that dark. So it's really interesting how different, yeah, people have a different perspective on things.
Yeah, it's a bit like, isn't it? Like, I try and explain to my daughters, I've got a 6-year-old and an 8-year-old, and the 6-year-old sometimes says she's scared of the dark, and it's trying to explain you shouldn't be scared of it. You might not be able to see it. And sometimes it's like, if you know, as your eyes adjust to the dark, it becomes less frightening because you can make the shapes out. It's arguable that's the same with your work, isn't it? As your eyes adjust to your work, people can start to understand the layers of beauty that are hidden in there.
Yeah.
And kind of go on that journey.
Yeah.
It's pretty groovy, isn't it? What have you got next? Like, I mean, I know you've got like a million things immediately. Imagine we're at the end of the year and you've done all the important things, and you were saying you were applying for some funding and stuff. Have you got a path in mind now? Do you feel like you're in a direction, or are you still trying to kind of feel it out?
I still want to apply like for different exhibitions, like with my art pieces. I really like that. Like I said, I want to apply for the King's Foundation, where they it's like the fellowship program with Lesage, where they embroider for Chanel. So just to have a, because that's why I basically studied feminine embroidery, to do like fashion. Mm-hmm. And now that I feel like I got a base of embroidery, I can do to finally get the chance to do embroidery on fashion pieces as well. Yeah, but just to do both. I like the artistic side of the embroidery and like the fashion side.
Trying to find that balance of expressing yourself without necessarily needing to take 300 hours to do it, would that be,
I mean, I like it, but yeah, you need to find people who buy these things as well.
This is very true. Yep. I mean, are you at peace with like getting any old job, that sort of thing? Like, have you got a job now? That might be a dumb question.
No, right now, no. I'm just working on the things at home. I always help my mom, like with the cooking and stuff. So always like balancing, like doing my own stuff and then helping her, because we have like a lot of fruits and vegetables in our garden that needs to be used. So yeah, I'm doing that. And I don't like to look too much in the future. So I live more in the moment. So I always go like from one thing to the other. And then after I've done that, I will look what I can do.
Yeah, it's just making me think, there was an artist I met when we opened up this sort of art space that I'm sitting in now, and she studied like fine art, but then life got in the way a bit and she became a mum, and like for 25 years that was kind of what she did. And now that we've opened, we've given her an opportunity to exhibit. She does this thing like poured paint, where she gets different paints in a cup, pours them and then blows the paint in different directions. That's so really cool. Lovely technique.
Yeah.
To be honest, probably akin to the sort of stuff that you're doing.
I always wanted to try, but I never managed to do it.
it's really lovely. And we've even been able to, she was doing this stuff all throughout. She didn't stop making her art, but she was doing this stuff all throughout and doing it in her kitchen. And now she's been able to use some space upstairs and just do things slightly larger. But it's just that, I suppose there's a pragmatism, right? I'm an old duffer now. I'm an old guy or whatever. And I just think there's something about the realism. When you're in the world of embroidery, it's useful. You know, there are things like fashion embroidery, movie embroidery. There are ways that you can carve out careers. And sometimes it's more difficult when you have these artistic expressions, because you want to stay true to your artistry. You don't necessarily want to then go and do really basic stuff. But I'm just interested in, you know, if you've got a clear vision, what happens? Because I'm not putting any doubt whatsoever, but there's a realism of saying, if you apply for these funds, if you get these things, brilliant. If you exhibit your work, brilliant. Are you happy if you get to this point where for a few years you have to kind of have quite a mundane job so that you can have this expressive sideline and still pursue that and allow that to kind of nurture and grow. Yeah. Are you up for that sort of thing?
Yeah, I think that's probably the best way to go, to have like these two things together instead of like...
It sounds very depressing. I'm sorry for being a bummer.
No. But it makes sense to have like income and still be able to do like the things you enjoy. And yeah, you never know how things work out.
I mean, the thing is, you do really well. Like, this is what I mean. I'm just fascinated because you're at a really interesting point from my standpoint. You know, you've been through the degree. This is now like stepping out into the big world and seeing what's available and understanding those trade-offs. And for some people, like I interviewed Hattie McGill a little while ago, and I've known her, and she's managed to get into the movie realm of embroidery, which is fantastic.
Yeah.
But it doesn't necessarily afford a lot of space for individual artistry.
Mm.
You know, there's that trade-off, and I've spoken to that about a lot of people, you know, what you have to do to pay the bills as opposed to how you express your own artistry. And it's just trying to understand that. Some people cannot. Some people will be like, no, I'm making the stuff I have to make, because if I don't, then I will die. And you've got a real strength of voice already. Do you know what I mean? That's what's fascinating, is you've come out of the gates and you went and took first place in our prize category. You know, it's like your stuff's like got a lot of power and it wants to be beholden to that, but it's just that thing of just, I suppose, power with a backup plan, something or other. I feel like I'm suddenly kicked into dad mode. Maybe that's what it is. I'd probably advise you to make sure you would brush your teeth in a minute.
No, but it makes sense. I think for now I will see how the thing with the King's Foundation goes, and then yeah, we'll see.
Like, I've no doubt, do you know what I mean?